This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts Podcast with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine. A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine. If you know me, you know how obsessed I am with live performance. To me, nothing replaces being in a theater and the lights going down and the orchestra starts to play and that first moment of magic. And I know the way I feel about theater, some people feel about sports or opera or dance or comedy or food. And what if there was a place that you could go and find out which live events are going on near you that night? And then for a discount price, you can get off your couch, put down that clicker, and experience the magic that is live performance. Well, there is a place, goldstar.com. You just go to that website, you type in your city, and every amazing live event will be listed at discount prices. Theater, dance, comedy, film, food, concerts, sports. No more staying home. You are going to go out and build memories and experiences that expand your mind and heart through live performance with GoldStar.com. GoldStar is in 26 cities around the country with over 8 million members already signed up to find out what event is going on near you. So go to GoldStar.com. Get out of your house and build memories that are magic for you and your family. Expand your mind, expand your hearts. Go see live performance by using goldstar.com. Tell them Alana sent you.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK. A-OK.
Hey, everyone. New episodes of Little Known Facts drop every Monday, and you can find them on your favorite podcast provider. Also, if you go to the website, littleknownfactspodcast.com, you'll find behind-the-scenes photos, videos, and interviews, and lots more on the gallery page. And if you are loving these intimate, candid conversations with all the artists who come on the show, please head over to the contributions page. I depend on these donations to continue to bring you these interviews every week. So if you love the show, please donate. Little known fact about my guest today, he was a shy high school kid ready to go home and watch Jerry Springer after school when another kid walked up to him and said, "Hey, there are tryouts for a play at school tomorrow. You should go." Reluctantly, he went. He got the part. He was cast as Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors, and the rest is history. Welcome, George Salazar, to the podcast.
I'm high above the city. I'm standing on the ledge. The view from here is pretty, and I step off the edge. And now I'm falling, baby, through the sky, through the sky. I'm falling, baby, through the sky. It's my calling.
Will you slate your name for me?
Yeah, George Salazar.
There you go. Hey, everyone. My guest today is George Salazar. He is best known for originating the role of Michael Mill in Be More Chill and for his Drama Desk-nominated performance in Off-Broadway's The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical. He starred in the Broadway revival of Godspell, the Off-Broadway revival of Tick, Tick, Boom, and in David Byrne and Flatboy Slim's Here Lies Love. On television, he has appeared on Bull and Divorce. He sings on many cast recordings, including George Salazar and Joe Iconis, Two Player Game, Be More Chill, The Lightning Thief, and Godspell. Welcome, George, to the podcast.
Oh, my God. Thanks for having me.
It is so amazing. The joy of my new career, apparently, as a podcast host, which is probably the first time I've said it, my career as a podcast host is getting to dive deep through the glories of Google and YouTube and stalking.
I hope you have a good, like an ergonomic office chair.
I don't. So listeners, if you want it, forget Patreon, forget PayPal. Just, I need a good ergonomic.
Send her a good chair.
Yeah. I feel like I need ergonomic things for every aspect. Do you have an ergonomic drum set?
I don't have a drum set.
So you just use other people's drums?
Yeah, I just rent studio space. I feel like it's impossible to have one in New York City.
I just sort of buried the lead, which is not only are you an incredible performer, singer, actor, dancer, you're an incredible drummer.
I would not consider myself a dancer. I would definitely say someone who can maybe move.
Okay. I'm so sad this isn't a visual experience so we could show the people at home how you dance.
Step touches and clapping on one and three. That's my specialty.
See, that's fancy lingo. That's choreo lingo. You know what to do. When you see a number taped to the floor, you're not like, why did someone put a number on? You know exactly what that's for.
Yeah, I always go, can I stand at zero? And they normally say, no, George, keep going.
You're
yep,
fine.
Yep, off stage, keep going.
You're fine.
Out the theater. Yeah, that's it.
You're so close to not being on the stage, and that's exactly where we want you. When I did my one and only musical, because my milieu is not musical theater, I love going to it. It's not something I've done a lot of, but when I did Charlie Brown, I just kept saying to everyone, like Jerry Mitchell, like anyone involved, like, this is a mistake. This is a mistake. I'm happy to like hand out the programs when people come in, whatever you need, but to be in it seems absurd. And I remember Jerry Mitchell being like, you are going to look like a dancer. Like when people see this show, they are not going to like look at Alana Levine and go, oh, she's the only one who can't dance.
That's the sign of a good choreographer. In my experience, I feel like I've only worked with, well,
Chris Catelli, genius.
Chris Catelli made us all look like dancers in Godspell. Chase Brock is really great at making us all, who's the choreographer for Be More Chill.
That's a really good name, too.
Chase Brock,
it's like a soap opera. Is that his real name?
That's his real name.
It's Chase Brock.
Yeah, hey, how's it going? I'm Chase Brock. That's not at all what he sounds like.
He's a choreographer in the theater. So his voice would be the opposite
pitched
of that.
Pitched a little higher with a little more cutting sass folded into it.
Yes. Fair enough.
But yeah, no, thank you. That's all. Those are all very sweet and nice things.
Yes.
And I would like to spend a lot of time with you all the time.
Yeah, I feel like that's possible. Isn't this podcast booth cozy?
This is amazing because typically the podcasts that I do are in people's kitchens. Mm-hmm.
Not to diminish in any way.
No, absolutely
people's kitchens.
Not. But this is not a kitchen.
No.
I'm sure there is a kitchen.
There is. I just got your smart water in the fridge there. These are fancy, fancy digs here at Hangar Studios.
Yeah, we
are.
I love it. There's a security camera in here.
It's also nicer than my apartment. And I have a pretty nice apartment. So there's that. Speaking of which, you grew up in Miami.
I grew up in Orlando, Florida.
In Orlando.
Yeah.
Not Miami. I'm confusing you with Jen Tepper.
Jen Tepper, we get that a lot, actually.
You're like twinsies. So weird.
Yeah. I grew up in Orlando, Florida.
Were you born there?
No, I was born in Staten Island. And my parents were like, we can't raise kids here. So we moved down there when I was four. And I was raised in Kissimmee, Florida. But I just say Orlando. Mm-hmm. It's so close. Mm-hmm. And it was a very interesting place to grow up in because we were 15 minutes from Disney. I was just talking about this the other day with a friend. I was like, you know, the magic of Disney was kind of lost on me very early in life.
That's so sad.
It is kind of sad.
Ba, 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 ba. Yeah.
And so because as a teenager in Central Florida, you have an annual pass. And like the hang after school was to just go catch the last couple hours of park opening at Disney or at Universal. And so it was kind of a weird way to grow up.
It's like the way presidents' children feel about the White House.
Yeah, they're like,
no biggie.
This shack.
Whatevs. Yeah. But all their friends want to come have sleepovers there, I'm sure. And they're like, can we just go to your house?
Yeah, I'm tired of all these Secret Service guys walking around.
So that was your upbringing. It was like living in the White House.
It was like living in the White House, yeah.
Exactly.
Just with a
some
sort of strange man dressed up as Mickey Mouse.
I had the most amazing experience at Disney World. So I didn't want to go. I had gone as a kid to Disneyland, and I just had the scary, like you go on a ride too young and you're just scared forever.
Yeah. No, that happens. That's a real thing.
Right? So that was my real thing. But I had kids, and it's like, well, I was going to be the only parent who like didn't do this rite of passage. So we went to Disney World, you know, shooting up in the bathroom just to get through it. And
me too.
I'm sorry. This may or may not be part of the final episode, but thank you for enjoying it. Okay, I wasn't really, but I wanted to.
Sure.
And my daughter was, we were online. We got her the autograph book right away so she could get all of the autographs of all the famous Disney characters.
The $45 autograph book.
I did a hack. I did like an IKEA hack.
Oh,
but
great.
She thought, George, if you're listening, it wasn't the real Disney one, but you didn't know and you're having a great life anyway. And mom's thrifty, and it's paid off in other ways.
Yes.
Waiting online to see Snow White.
Uh-huh.
And the line is forming, and it's getting intense. It's like Meryl Streep in the park. Like, yeah. Everyone's like, oh, my God, we got to go, right? And so she trips on a little twig, and I look at her, and I'm like, oh, George is like, is she bleeding out of her eye? This is not the most magical thing that's supposed to happen. And I realize, okay, it's not her actual eyeball that's bleeding.
God.
Mazel to the eyeball.
Seriously.
It's like just a big gash right under her eyebrow. And I'm like, gee, we got to go. It's Disney. You know, there's like a medical center filled
with like
Mickey Band-Aid somewhere or something. And she's like, no, I got to meet Snow White. I got to meet Snow White. I'm like, okay. So not one person, mostly adults online, by the way, creepy adults, will let this little six-year-old go to the front of the line. Not a one. I'm like, can we just, like, she's bleeding. She's gushing.
Yeah, and, like, face wounds, they bleed out.
They bleed out. Like, you're like, this looked like the opening of, like, the Spielberg movie.
Yeah,
like,
some
this
sort
is,
of war film.
This is not good.
This poor girl on the front lines of...
Cut to Snow White. They arrive, like, and Snow White looks out onto the line, and she sees Georgia, and they're not allowed to speak. Because you can't know that they're really humans inside
right.
who can speak.
That her name
real...
is Sheila, and she like... went to ITT Technical
exactly.
Institute.
Exactly, but really wants to be on Broadway. And so she motions for Georgia to come over to her, and people are not happy. But it's like the human's part. It's sort of like Moses and the Jews going across the river blood. And it's her river blood.
Yeah, yeah.
And I swear to God, she laid hands on my daughter. And she healed her. The blood stopped.
Oh, my God. Who is this woman? Where is she? What's her
Sheila,
story now?
Sheila, who went to...
Yeah. Where's Sheila? Sheila, if you're listening, thank you.
She's like Tony Robinson. Who's the, like, the guy? Is it Tony Robbins?
Tony Robbins.
She's doing that somewhere. Or she's selling things on HED. But, like, I'm not kidding. Healed her. Like,
oh my
I
goodness.
Swear. The blood stopped.
So I was wrong that Disney is magical.
It is magical. I was wrong to be shooting up in the bathroom.
Yeah, you and me both.
We're both wrong. So that's my Disney story, and I'm only exaggerating this much.
Oh, my goodness.
So I wish you'd had that happen because you might, I don't know, maybe you'd be an accountant now. I don't know. Maybe it worked out the way it was meant to. Such a long...
Well, everybody know if there's one thing that people know about me, it's that I love doing taxes.
Who does it?
It's thrilling. It's my favorite time of year.
I wish it were April 14th every day so I could just get to the post office like midnight or April 15th. Is it midnight on April 15th that you have to do it?
Yeah.
So you are of Filipino descent. Is that correct?
Yeah. My mother's Filipino. My father's Ecuadorian.
So when you moved to Orlando, was there a big community for either Filipino or Ecuadorian?
You know, the thing about Filipinos is even if there isn't, they'll find each other.
They make it.
Yeah. And it's crazy. So it becomes like this huge family. So we did, we had this whole like Filipino support group of friends, and we spent every weekend going to each other's homes, and
right.
it's nice.
So they weren't relatives.
They weren't
people
relatives.
You met.
Yeah. But Filipinos all love family. Family is a really important part of the culture. And so, yeah. So when they don't have their family nearby, they create a family, which
How
is kind of
your,
like theater people.
Totally. So your dad from Ecuador, your mom, were they born in America or are they from Ecuador and the Philippines?
They're from their respective countries. And their stories, like I love telling this story. It's
Tell
so
it.
Sweet. And it's like a Lifetime movie. So my mother...
Wait, let me write it down.
Yeah, write it down.
Okay.
Screenplay.
Act one, scene one.
My mother is a nurse. My parents are 8 years apart. And
who's older?
My mother.
Okay.
And my mom was in a tricky relationship, and it maybe wasn't the healthiest. And she met my father. My dad was, at the time, he was like 22, super young. And he was just like the maintenance guy at this hospital in Staten Island. And they became quick friends. And there was a night where my mom was in a little bit of danger. And so she contacted my father and he basically like borrowed a friend's truck. And this is, I mean, he's like in his early 20s. My mother had my older sister, Janice. And so he drove this truck over and basically like moved all of their stuff into his like early 20s, like bachelor pad, which was like
Amazing.
Just full of cockroaches and
sure.
it was disgusting.
Yeah.
And that's how they started their life together. It was like my dad was like this like kind of Prince Charming, speaking of Disney,
Incredible.
Like a Prince Charming who kind of like came in and saved them. And my dad raised my sister like she was his own and it was never a thing. And we have a very strong family.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's a beautiful story. But yeah, they met. I mean, only in New York does a Filipino meet an Ecuadorian, start a family together.
Yeah.
It's
insane. Lasted.
And it lasts.
That's
they're still
really
together.
Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how many years have they been together?
Oh my God. They just celebrated their 34th wedding anniversary.
So they got married.
They got married. Yeah. My dad had me when he was 26.
So you had a young dad.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's an amazing father. But yeah, 26.
And he is a musician as well?
Yeah, he's a drummer. I got the drumming bug from my dad. So like as a kid, I wanted to play music. It was always an important part of our family.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, you know, a stubborn kid and didn't want to play drums because my dad played the drums.
Right.
So I picked up so many instruments.
Like what?
The piano for a little bit and hated it. The guitar for a little bit and hated it. Although I still play the guitar.
But I hate it.
But I hate it. The tenor sax. Oh, that's it. And so I went through those three instruments and I was like, these aren't exciting. And I was like, okay, fine. I'll try the drums.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was. That was like my first passion, was sitting behind a drum set and making a lot of noise.
Did he play in bands?
Yeah. So my dad loves telling the story about.
I wish he were here.
When,
we should have him on the show. All right, next time.
So he would take me with him to band rehearsals,
mm-hmm.
and he remembers like you know me at three, going to a band rehearsal, and he said any time that he would hit the crash cymbal, I would be watching and I would do it along with him, and so he knew from early on that I was gonna be musically inclined. But yeah, and that's how it all started.
Do you read music?
I do read music.
So when you are first day of rehearsal of any musical
yeah.
and they hand out sheet music,
yeah.
you know what you're looking at.
Kind of, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, sometimes you work on things that are super complicated
mm-hmm.
and
you just
it's
have to
not
listen
that easy.
Over and over
totally,
again. Yeah.
Totally. But yeah, I can navigate my way through. And that actually, I've learned that just from honestly really being in New York for 10 years and I love working because it's never just like a paycheck
uh-huh.
or a credit. I feel like I learn and get better from watching other people
mm-hmm.
That I'm working with. So yeah, so it's always a learning process, always a student. And yeah, just I over time like have sharpened that skill.
And here you are.
Here we are.
So when did you like fall in love with performing? And maybe that's presumptuous. I feel having been in the presence of your performance that you love it.
I love it.
Okay.
There's nothing else in the world that I would rather be doing. So as a kid, I was always like a class clown
mm-hmm.
and there was always like a performative nature to what I was doing. I remember the earliest thing, I was probably like 7 or 8 and I would put on these black pants that I had that were hemmed really high and I'd put white socks on and black shoes and I, a like a big white shirt, and I would dance for my family to what? Michael Jackson music.
I was like, do you want to be in Book of Mormon? Like, what's happening? Hello.
You know, I would dance for them, and right. It's so funny. Like, they would, like, tip me. They would, like, sit in a circle. My mother would, like, put like lawn furniture inside of the living room, and everyone would sit around, and just like my uncles and aunts would just like tip me. But that was the extent of it. I did band growing up, and then in my junior year of high school, I was the class clown. So I was a huge Weird Al fan. So I would like rewrite pop songs, and they would be like super raunchy, and I was that kid.
Right,
and,
but there was talent for it.
Maybe, I don't know. I wouldn't
raunchy
go that far.
Raunchy lyrics.
I'm a terrible songwriter, actually. I'm really bad at it.
Glad you met Joe Iconis.
Yes, thank God. Mm-hmm. So I remember I was in a computer class one day, and I was singing lyrics that I had made up that were not at all clever or smart. They were just disgusting. And the president of the drama club overheard me and was like, we're having auditions later today after school for Little Shop of Horrors. You should come in. And my typical routine as like a really heavy set high school kid was to go home immediately after school, make pizza rolls in the microwave, and watch like Jerry Springer or Maury Povich. Like super healthy.
Yeah. Maybe a Pop-Tart.
Maybe a box of Pop-Tarts. And so he was like, you should come. And I was like, nah, I have plans.
Yeah.
Let me check my schedule. Super busy.
Yeah.
And so he was like, no, really, you should come. It won't take very long. And so I said, okay, cool. I'll go. So I went.
Pizza rolls shall wait.
Yeah. They'll be there.
Oh, yeah.
They keep for a very long time.
Yeah.
As long as your freezer's, you know,
sometimes
operating.
Sometimes not even in a freezer. It's all good.
And so, yeah. So I get there. And there's auditions, and I was like, I don't know what to do.
Right.
And so he was like, just pick a song from one of those books that you know. And I sang the Elton John version of Circle of Life. And the next day, they cast me as Seymour in the show, and it was crazy. And so all of a sudden, I was doing theater, and I loved it. I loved the community of people. I loved being around people like me. You know, I was a high school kid who was figuring himself out, and through that I learned so much about myself and like came out at the end of junior year to my friends, and it was like this really incredible moment in my life, and I couldn't stop from that point on. And before then, mind you, I was in the IB program in high school.
Okay.
Was super nerd, all about doing my homework, all about straight A's. Because I wanted
That's
to be
an international baccalaureate.
That
for
is
for those of you who are not in an IB program. Thank you.
And so I wanted to be a neurosurgeon. And so my mother
and you are.
Is a nurse.
And you are. It's not, crazy.
Not with these shaky hands, honey. My mom's a nurse. My older sister is a dentist here in the city. And I have cousins who are doctors and nurses. And so I grew up in that bubble and loved the idea of helping people. And serving people. And
you were a great student.
And I was I worked real. I mean, I worked really hard.
But it was important to you.
It was. But then I found this theater thing and fell in love with it so fast and so hard. And, you know, by my senior year of high school, as I was applying to colleges, I was also like auditioning for schools for their theater programs. And I think my parents were surprised by it because it was just came out of left field.
Yeah, fast and furious.
And my dad, being an artist in New York, felt like he didn't want me to follow in those footsteps because life of an artist in the city or really anywhere is just, it's tricky, it's hard. And he didn't want that life for me. And he knew that I had been working really hard with my studies and felt like, and still kind of feels like I would make it a terrific doctor. And so it took a little.
So there was pushback from them.
There was a little pushback
from
them.
When you changed course in this way.
Yeah, yeah. Over time, my mother almost immediately like flipped and was like, yeah, number one fan. My dad, it took a little time to get him convinced.
But I get it. He was scared for you or didn't.
Yeah, no, it makes complete sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm still scared for me. It's like, you know, it's a very like hard life to navigate. And
why am I not one bit scared for you? Not one bit.
Because you're delusional. Did you shoot up in the bathroom here?
Before Disney World and every podcast interview, just a little bump. So when you say there, like your mom right away was like, suddenly Seymour, he was amazing. Wasn't he amazing? Amazing. Like what, first of all, do you remember the name of the person in high school who came up to you and said, audition tomorrow?
Of course. Every time I see him, we're still friends. I tell him like nothing in my life would
Isn't
be possible
incredible?
Without you. His name is Donald Roop. He actually became the drama teacher at our high school.
Amazing.
But and now he runs a theater company in Orlando, and he's amazing. He taught me how to sing. He taught me how to, I remember we did these exercises because I was like, how do you make your voice shake at the end of a note? Mm. He was like, well, that's first of all called vibrato. Yeah. And he, you know, he gave me like these kind of like janky voice lessons. He's very crucial to my story.
Yeah. I think so much about that. The moments in your life where someone from the outside saw you.
Yeah. And then just kind of the whole course of your life changes because of one person.
It's incredible. Yeah. It's incredible. It gives me chills when we can kind of find that and distill it down. And
I think it's important that people remember those things, you know,
and recognize it and honor it and say thank you to those people. And you will at your Tony speech. I know you will. When you made this change, was it like crying and screaming in your house, like I'm going or not? Or was it not that dramatic?
No, it wasn't that dramatic. I understood where they were coming from. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I got it. Like, I understood it.
Yeah.
But I was still really focused on doing this, right?
And so where did you end up?
I went to the University of Florida. Mm-hmm. So it was a very small program. When I got admitted, there were four of us in my class. So it was three girls and me. I, again, no audition experience. So there was a dance call. And I showed up in like baggy jeans and flip-flops.
Perfect.
And for some reason, this musical this musical theater professor was like, he's
that
completely clueless, but there's something about him. And so he brought me in.
Yeah. Give me to him. Yes.
Yeah. And so he took me in. And the first time that I started to feel a shift from my dad was when in my senior year of college, we played George in Sunday in the Park with George. And my dad, who's like a macho guy, I've seen him cry maybe like I can count it on one hand.
Yeah.
He came up to me after the performance just completely crying. And he gave me the biggest hug and he said, I get it now. And we still have moments like that up until today. And I cherish those moments and I remember them so vividly because they're just so meaningful.
Yeah.
You know, this is a guy who didn't want me to pursue this, not because he thought it was stupid or dumb. It was all out of this like love and care, and that he didn't want me to have to like worry about where rent was going to come from.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's when the switch started happening. And I was like, thank God it's happening now because I'm graduating in like three months.
Can I circle back for a second? Because you said you came out to your friends in your junior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Had you been out to your family?
No, it took me a little time to come out to my family. My father's Latino. My mother is Filipino. I told my mom while I was in college, and my dad actually didn't come out to him until probably about like 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. How old are you?
I'm 22. Mm-hmm. I'm 32. Mm-hmm. And
you're 18.
I'm 18. Mm-hmm. I just moved to the city.
So big. Those buildings are so tall. Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's not like the pictures at all. I came out to him way later in life out of fear of not being accepted. And you know, that was a little bit of a personal challenge, but we're great. Everything is great. And I mean, he's an amazing father and
so
the
your
most
mom,
loving guy.
Your mom kept the secret.
Yeah, I felt in retrospect, I feel awful because that's such a terrible thing to put someone through, to like have to put that pressure on my mother to not share that with my dad. And believe me, there were many times where there were some close calls and she would let me know about them. But
right.
Get
dressed. And tell Steve to get dressed too. Okay, he's coming. Yeah.
Yeah. This is George's friend, roommate, classmate.
He works for George.
That was tricky. And I in retrospect, I feel bad because that was a long time for her to keep that secret. But it's all out in the open. And I'm a happy camper. And my father is the most loving man. And we're good. We're solid.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. So you finish college. By the way, you have already played Seymour and George. What do you aspire to when you've already played those roles?
And to do them again professionally.
I guess. That makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. You come to New York?
I come to New York. Yeah. So I had to get out of Florida.
It's hot.
No one wanted to hire me.
Why?
I didn't have a single professional job during college. All of my classmates were booking summer stock after summer stock after summer stock, and no one would hire me.
By the way, all your three classmates.
Yeah, yeah.
All three of them.
All three. A 75% success rate at the University of Florida.
Just to be clear.
That's
the saddest. You must have felt like, what's going on?
I did. At first, I was like, what's wrong with me? And then I was like,
What's wrong with them?
They're doing Carousel and Hello Dolly, mm-hmm. and I would stick out like a sore thumb. And so I was okay with it. And so what I would do is come to New York because I knew this is where I needed to be.
Yeah.
So I would come to New York and I would intern. And so my first internship was with Martian Entertainment.
Martian
Entertainment, Carl White and Tom Smeads. And then my second one was with Bone O'Brien Brown. Mm-hmm. And I loved that internship. But I learned so much about the business.
Bon O'Brien Brown, they represent many, many Broadway shows. Almost all of them at any given moment.
Yeah, yeah. And I learned so much about the business. You know, the problem with going to school in Florida was that my professors know of New York when it was 1984. Mm-hmm. And times had changed, you mm-hmm. know? Times Square wasn't a sex den anymore. It was
right.
cleaned up by Disney. And so I didn't get much of the real world training at school, but I got it when I would spend time in New York, and it really prepared me for this big scary move to the big city.
So you described yourself as a snacker watching Jerry Springer mm-hmm. after school.
Yeah.
And I was picturing a more heavy set version of yourself.
Oh, I was a tubby, chubby kid.
Like, how much do you think you weighed in high school before? At your heaviest, how much do you think you weighed?
At my heaviest, I was 240 pounds.
And how tall are you?
5'10".
And can I see a profile shot, please? And the other side.
And my social security number is...
Do you have a passport? Kiss of death. I always say the minute they ask me if I have a passport, it's like I did not get this job. Because they are not flying me anywhere. Because they have nothing to say to me if they're asking me if I have, like, do you have a passport in good standing?
In good standing.
I'm not going on this job that shoots in the Czech Republic, I know. And that is what I really wanted. So you are a very not heavy person.
Thank you so much.
Across from me. And I wonder when that shift happened.
That shift happened when I started... So I moved to New York.
Yes.
I wait tables at Bubba Gump Shrimp Company. Allergic to shrimp.
Well, that's good.
Mind you.
Because it kept you from, you know,
from eating.
They only hired people who were allergic so that their staff would not steal their
exactly
their inventory.
It's brilliant business. I went on tour with the Nonek. So this was my first
job.
Big professional job was the Nonek tour Spring Awakening.
Did you get it through backstage? Like, how did you get that job?
Well, when I moved to New York, my college had a showcase in New York, and I met my manager at the time, and then she got me meetings with agencies.
So you came to New York with some representation.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that was incredibly helpful.
Yes.
I've been with the same agents since 2008 when I moved up here.
That's incredible. Loyalty is important.
It is, and they're amazing people, and they have my back. I went on tour and continued to snack. I mean, it was like one-nighters, so we were having meals at gas stations. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't really eating. I didn't have healthy options.
Yeah.
And then I got back from that and then booked Godspell. And when we were doing Godspell...
On Broadway. That's not... Well, let's finish this story and then go back to how you got Godspell on Broadway.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were still heavy.
So I was still heavy.
Yeah.
And I was still eating whatever I wanted to eat, but that show is so physical. And I started... losing weight.
Without trying. Just because of the work.
Just because of the amount of sweating and cardio that was happening in that show. And it wasn't until I started losing weight when I realized how much weight I actually had on my body.
And how much more you wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. I talk about how I feel like I had like reverse body dysmorphia, like where I would walk past a mirror and be like, I'm not big. Look at me. I look great. And then I look back at pictures and I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Well, what do you think that is? Were you just happy?
I was always a happy kid.
Yeah.
And you know, it helps like having a loving family and food Delicious is important food. In both cultures.
Yes.
And so it was never a thing.
Mm-hmm. And your parents didn't make you feel self-conscious about it?
No. Nope. My mom she's a stickler for a good posture. And so that's the extent of it. She would say, straight your back.
Yes.
Straight your back.
George, I feel like I need to straight my back.
Right I'm now. Trying to, yeah. All day today, I've been like, straight your back, George.
Yeah.
Ergonomic desk chair.
Yeah, this is not. This is the IKEA. I feel like I even know the name of it. Not the Jasper, but I know. I have this chair. Okay.
Yeah, so that's when it happened. Was I was like, okay,
let's
this
keep
is
going.
Something that I yeah, let's keep going. Let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been like a you know it's been a rocky road.
Do you have like an ongoing dialogue with and about food? Does this continue to be like a through line in your life?
Or yeah, when things get like tough, like I find a lot of comfort in mm-hmm. food, and so
it's delicious.
It's delicious.
Yeah,
and so it's been a little bit of a battle because it's interesting. It's like my weight kind of has fluctuated over the last couple of years, based on what's happening in my life, and so I find when I'm really thriving, it's like I don't even have to think about it. And then when I'm down in the dumps, I'm back to pizza rolls and Jerry mm-hmm. Springer. But yeah, that's how it all happened. Was just like doing a show where I was getting a solid workout 8 times a week, and then catching my reflection and being like, oh, it's possible. I can change. The want to change was not cosmetic. It was I want to be able to sing and hold a note out while doing something crazy with my legs,
right?
And not have to run into problems with that.
You want to so keep up became, with yourself.
Yeah, it what? Became like a health thing, mm-hmm. and that's that, and it continues to be that for me.
So you got Godspell quickly after Spring Awakening, or not?
Yeah, I got back in May of 2011, and they made the offer in August of 2011. So
was that a long process?
3 months. It was like being in an abusive relationship.
Great.
So they would have me in, and then they would say, it's going to be a no, sorry. And then like a week later, they'd be like, hey, can we see George again?
What?
It was like just the back and forth. And I think I went in like maybe 5 or 6 times for it.
So was that just a team of passionate people who just were having a hard time making decisions and kind of...
I think that, you know, the beauty and the magic, but also like the nightmare of casting a production of Godspell is that you need 10 people who can carry a show on their own.
Right.
And then together as an ensemble. It's
so would they
like
pair you up and sort of do that sort of thing where you came in groups and
yeah, they would
mix and match?
So the first audition was to prepare my own parable. And then the callbacks were group storytelling moments.
I'm going to prepare my own parable.
Yeah, they were like, tell a parable, pick a parable.
And were you religious growing up, or did you have like parables in your pocket?
Oh, no. But they you know, it was in the breakdown, and then they would say, come in and tell the parable as if you're telling it to a room of people who are a combination of like deaf people and blind people and mute people, and try to find a way to kind of like appeal to all the senses with this storytelling.
So what did you do?
I did impressions. I went in and did a Gilbert Gottfried impression. I did an Aaron Neville impression. And I did...
So you're good at impressions.
Well, I'm good at 4 impressions.
Remember, it was for deaf people and blind people. So you're great at doing impressions.
That deaf people would not hear. But the blind people would be like,
what's he doing?
Oh my God, Aaron Neville's here?
It's amazing.
That guy's still alive?
I thought we were just at a Godspell audition. Is that Gilbert? Gilbert, wait, can you do a little Gilbert?
Yeah, Gilbert. I'm going to step away from the mic.
Because you don't want to scare me.
I'm molting. It's just like, you know, I did that.
Did you like him growing? Was he a comedian that you enjoyed?
Yeah, I loved the Problem Child movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like the villain in all those movies, and I loved that guy. And
he has a podcast. Do you ever listen to his podcast?
No, because that sounds like not an easy listen. I'm sitting across from you. I'm listening to your voice. I could listen to your voice all day. I would probably get through a minute
George,
of Gilbert Gottfried
George.
And I'd be like, "What am I doing?
This is terrible." He
Gilbert, if you're listening, I also know for a fact that that's not his real voice. Howard Stern on air, played a voicemail from Gilbert Gottfried. And
he sounds like Clint Eastwood, doesn't he? And he was like, the
voicemail literally went, hi, Howard. This is Gilbert. Just calling to see if we're still on for 4 o'clock on Thursday. Give me a call back. Okay, bye. I mean, it's so soft-spoken, low, pitched really low.
There's nothing Fran Drescher about it. Mm-mm. Nothing. It's sort of like when you, you know, Cyndi Lauper or certain people, when they're being interviewed, she's the opposite. So, yeah. Like, when she would be on Letterman, she'd be like, I don't know, David, I just feel like, and then she'd be like, see you true, right? You're like, yeah. What's happening? Like, she's Betty Boop in person. And then in her art, it's like the most grounded. It's all confusing to me. I don't understand
it's
anything.
It's interesting.
It is interesting.
I find the careers of, and it's normally a comedian who, like Bobcat Goldthwait, like these guys, this was really prevalent in the 80s. And also with like Sam Kinison, but I think Sam Kinison was Sam Kinison.
Right. He screamed on and off stage.
Yeah. But it's interesting to me, these guys who made really successful careers off of essentially just playing the same character in every job, which is what I do. No.
Which is why Michael's going to be in the bathroom for the next 50 years. You're going to be like Chaz Palminteri. There'll be like the movie and the one-man show and then the musical. And you'll be like, I'm not doing the musical. You know what? Actually, I am going to do the musical.
My vocal cords will be long gone by the time that's possible.
But he's like, I just read that. He was on this show. He made me weep. Like I thought, I'll have Chaz Palminteri on. Uh-huh. Okay, because he was with Bono, Brian Brown.
Yeah.
They reached out and they were like, would you like Chaz Palminteri? I was like, yeah, but had no thought. Like, I didn't feel like I'd come away going like, that's my new best friend. I thought, I want to hear about A Bronx Tale. Like, what an amazing, epic story that went from like, guy was like living on food stamps and now, you know, there are streets named after him in the Bronx. Anyway, but that was an example of someone who, just in his telling his story, and so much of it also is about his parents.
Yeah.
Right? And just that connection and us just never wanting to stop making them proud. And that's it. And so those moments, when you said, I could cry right now, but when you said that thing about your mom holding that secret and that you felt like, in retrospect, you feel bad.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a mom and I just want to tell you, I'm going to relieve you of any of that guilt or anxiety about that, because we are really capable of loving our husbands and our partners and being completely 100% in that relationship. But when you have a child, there's just something like her desire to protect you and love you, knowing full well she wouldn't have married someone who ultimately wouldn't be okay with it.
Right.
Your mother would never have been with him if he wasn't the dad that could have a gay son.
Yeah.
Like, none of that would have happened.
Yeah.
And she understood the time he needed and the time you needed. And I just want to, like, literally, I'm going to be your Snow White right now. And your eye is going to stop bleeding forever because I'm just telling you, like.
Well, but now it's tearing up.
That's okay. It's not blood. Yeah. And that's the other thing as a parent, just letting your kids know. Crying, it's just a feeling.
Oh, yeah. I cry too much.
That's okay. We have some idea that, like, one feeling is the right feeling and the other. I live next to this couple and he's training, you know, he takes these vows of silence. Like, he's the most successful advertising guy and also has this other life where he goes on, like, silent retreats for weeks at a time and is in training, like, to be a like, it's crazy that he lives these two lives beautifully at once. And I just learn little things from them in the elevator. Like, I have no pain. I, like, can meditate for 20 seconds. But anytime I ride in the elevator with him, I get, like, some little beautiful gift.
Yeah.
And he was just, like, sad, happy. Why is happy the one? Like, they're just, it's all good.
Well, there's this amazing book. It's an epic poem by Khalil Gibran, and it's called The Prophet.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something that I found in college, and it kind of became my Bible. And there's this amazing chapter on happiness and sorrow. And he says that that the same cup that holds our happiness is the same cup that holds our sorrow. And you can't fill your cup with happiness until it overflows with sorrow.
Mm.
And it's such a beautiful thing to remember.
And ruminate on, right?
Yeah,
like, whatever that means.
And be okay when sadness and sorrow comes into your life, that it's just making room for more happiness to come. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as an artist navigating a life in the city, it's so important to remember that all of this is just now, and tomorrow something incredible can happen. And
you said something that I've been holding on to, because I think I've known for a few weeks now that we were going to sit down together. So I've just taken my time to sort of, you know, peel you like an onion and see what I can find out there. And you said something about, which I think will be such a great takeaway, and it was for me, it is really hard to be kind to ourselves when things are not going well.
Yeah.
And someone had asked you the question about, you know, lack of success. We all can feel great when there's success. And how do you hold on to yourself? And you said, I surround myself with really kind, wonderful people.
Yeah.
But I thought, like, God, it's so hard to be kind to ourselves.
It is.
It is so easy to be kind to other people. And that was no small thing that you said, to be kind to myself when I'm not working.
Yeah.
That's like the hardest thing on the planet.
Well, I've gone on quite the journey to find a way to exist in a way that where I'm always being good to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been, I love the journey. I love the journey so much. And so it's taken some time to kind of, I'll pick up a book that someone recommends, or I'll try putting crystals near my bed. I'll try anything, right? And then it's just a matter of kind of picking and choosing which things are actually working and are affecting you in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about what's happened with Be More Chill is that there are a lot of kids who have fallen in love with this show who are having a particularly tough time. And I can't imagine growing up right now.
Yeah.
I can't even fathom it. And I have three nieces and a nephew.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you're watching them navigate.
I'm watching them. Yeah, yeah.
Social media world.
Yeah. And so it's. I'm thrilled to have gone on my own journey and when I'm asked things like that, to be able to like share a little bit of whatever has worked for me in hopes that maybe it'll work for someone else, you know? Because it took years.
Yeah, and it never ends.
And it doesn't end. And I'm still navigating. I'm still learning. And
now you're growing up in the same world as them, right? I mean, it's all out there too, and how to protect yourself.
Yeah.
Like, and we'll get to that. So you got Godspell because of your Gilbert Gottfried impersonation, which is uncanny.
Thank you.
It was a torturous process of getting that job,
yeah.
It sounds like. To literally be told it's over, can we see George next week? Those are opposite sentences.
Yeah, it was just like a back and forth.
Right, and to go in each time and not go like, guys, you're hurting my feelings.
Yeah.
am I here to make you, like, am I just here? Is this a game to you? This is my life.
The last audition, I got there, I'm always early, and I got there an hour early, and they were running an hour behind. So I was there for 2 hours, and they were seeing new people. Casting director was like, "Hi, nice to meet you." And I was like,
"You've got."
I was actually like, "What's going on?" And then the last person went in, and someone went out, grabbed Ken Davenport. He came in, walked into the room. The accompanist walked out, and I was like, "What's happening?" And so they brought me in, and Charlie Alterman, amazing music director, was like, "Come over to the piano, George," and he was like, "Let's play with keys for Light of the World."
Mm-hmm.
And we sang for 10 minutes.
Is that a song you had sung auditions for them?
Or yes.
Was this the
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So you had started to do the material from the show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they were like, "Cool, thanks so much, George." And I walked out and was like, that was bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I don't know,
the accompanist walked out, the producer walked in just to watch my audition. Like, what's happening? And I went to go see my friend Elizabeth Judd, who is in Hamilton now. And we had met doing Spring Awakening together. And she was at New 42. And I was like, "Can I come over? Can I come? I just want to like unload what just happened."
Yeah.
So I go over there, and then I get a phone call, and it's my manager and my agent. And they said, "You know what happens when your manager and your agent call you?
We're dropping you."
Both of us.
We are done.
and I just fell to the ground and started weeping in the middle of New 42.
Sure.
And I called my mom once I collected myself, and she was with a patient at a nursing home. And I told her, and she just went, ah, and she just screamed at the top of her lungs. And I could only imagine, much right. like
all of the elderly.
Yeah. Just like being like, what is wrong with this Asian woman?
Yeah. Yeah.
She's oh, no, going they knew. Something.
This Asian woman's son just got cast in the Broadway revival of Godspell. Stephen Schwartz.
Heard of him?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was the story of finding out about that.
And there were some amazing people in that cast.
Oh, my God. And we're all like such good friends still. I do workshops with like high school groups that mm-hmm. are doing Godspell. And
because of this experience, is mm-hmm. that something that grew out of this?
Yeah, yeah. Like the last one I did was up in Concord, New Hampshire. Concord High School was doing a production of Godspell, and I went in to kind of, you know, look at what they were doing.
This is how it's done.
This is how we did it.
Sorry. That's terrible. Terrible.
So I would go in and the takeaway from it is that these kids are going to remember this experience for the rest of their lives, mm-hmm. much like I hold it so near and dear to my heart. And you create a family because you really, I mean, you're in the trenches in that show, mm-hmm. and it just, the energy never, never ends, never drops. So all of them. I just saw Lindsay in Carousel, and she was flawless and beautiful and incredible. And
it's like seeing your sister up there.
Yeah,
right?
She is like a sister feeling. To me, yeah. actually. Yeah.
So did that show, was that a successful experience? Did the audiences love it?
The audiences loved it. The audiences loved it. We had like mixed reviews from the critics. We got snubbed at the Tonys. It was a very interesting experience because it was my first kind of like foray into commercial theater. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I'll speak frankly, like it, the commercial aspect of it kind of, it burned me a little bit. And when that show closed, I found myself kind of like nosediving a little bit. And that's when I started to pick things up and be like, okay, what, I need to be better
right.
to myself. And so that was kind of the
So coming down from that show, like I've been on Broadway. Now what?
Yeah. That was actually what was going through my mind was like, you know, they these people train you to look at Broadway like it's the pinnacle of success. And so what I was watching the Jim Carrey documentary on Netflix, and he says in there, he's like, you know, when you have everything, his outlook on it is a little pessimistic.
Skewed. Yeah.
For my taste, but he kind of nailed it when he said, you know, like when all your dreams come true, what do you dream about? And so I was faced with that reality, like, so wait a minute. So I'm just going to, for the rest of my life, hope to get a job, do the job. It's going to close. And then I have to mourn the loss of this thing again. And so it was a challenge to find a way to kind of be okay with how the universe works out and trust that everything happens for a reason. And there's always something around the corner. And
do you feel confident in your gift?
For a long time, no. I would say in the last 3 years, yes. Yeah. In the last 3 years, the way I see myself is a little different.
So I'm meeting you in present day. This podcast has been an extraordinary opportunity for me to start learning about people and things beyond my very small
I love that.
Neighborhood.
Yeah.
So part of what happened is I've known Ben Platt for a really long time.
Yeah.
He played my son in a show. Then I went to see him in a play in the Berkshires, and it was The Black Suits.
Yeah.
Written by Joe Iconis.
Yeah.
And Will Roland
yeah.
was in that show. So then when Ben got Dear Evan Hansen, and I remember he came over, he was playing songs for me before it had even gone to Washington. And I was like, we were both like, isn't this special?
Yeah.
He's like, I think this is really special. I'm like, it is really special. And then he's like, Will Roland, that guy from, remember you came to see me in that show in the Berkshire? Anyway, this whole thing. And so then Will came on this podcast and really started kind of teaching me about the Christmas show and Joe Iconis and yeah. Jen Tepper. And then it kind of like kept expanding. Like
yeah.
you throw a pebble in the water and it kind of ripples and yeah. circle and circle. So then I meet Jen Tepper, and I'm just like, kind of had heard of her and kind of heard of this remarkable group of books that she'd written. And
yeah.
54 Below, of course, I've gone to see tons of friends do magnificent performances there. And I was like, oh, my God, these incredibly young people who are like never sleeping and doing so much to change the face of theater as we know it. And then I meet Joe and then I'm like, he's at the center of this thing.
Yeah.
And then you, I'm going, oh, I saw that guy in Percy. Like all this stuff is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But there is all of us to say right now, there's in the zeitgeist of our New York City theater culture, there's this show called Be More Chill.
Yeah.
That when I talked to Joe, it kind of was the saddest thing. Like, here's this show that's nothing like Dear Evan Hansen, but enough from a producing standpoint to go, it's kind of like, how would we market it?
Right.
Like, it's kind of like Dear Evan Hansen,
right,
just if you read the cliff notes,
sure,
of what the,
yeah,
show's,
sure,
about. And here's Dear Evan Hansen coming in after you guys had this remarkable experience and well-received production of it.
Yeah.
And it was all set to come in to New York, right?
After, I mean, hope. Yeah,
that was what was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So I, as you said, like, I wouldn't want to grow up now. My nieces, my nephew, I'm a mom. There are all these things about the internet that are devastating.
Yeah.
The flip side of that is there was this online frenzy to kind of,
yeah,
have Be More Chill live, right?
Yeah.
That's my experience of it, is I've researched it and kind of seen it. There's like, there's, yeah, a movement.
They resuscitated a show that we all had grieved 3 years ago. We,
right,
grieved over the death of this show. Yeah, it was, it all started literally 12 months ago. A year ago, around this time,
yeah,
I had just closed Lightning Thief.
You were amazing in it.
Thank you. And I started to notice some rumblings. I was eating pizza rolls and watching old vintage episodes of Jerry Springer that I recorded on VHS.
In my black high-hemmed pants and white socks. And I was moonwalking to my couch. Yes. My post-closing show ritual.
It's how we all have our morning process.
That's what we do. I have a crystal by my head.
mine is just very embarrassing. Yeah, no. I started noticing kind of a rumble on the internet, and I was confused as to whether this was Lightning Thief related, because Lightning Thief like developed quite
also
a following, because,
yes,
the Percy Jackson franchise,
yeah,
and so there were all these Percy Jackson fans who hated the film.
And loved the musical.
And loved the musical because we honored the intention of the book.
That's right.
And
also because you were at the Lucia Lortel Theater, guys, it's a smaller theater. How many seats are there?
I think it's like 250.
So when I came, it's packed. People are waiting outside. The stage door was like Hamilton. Like there was a real...
It was nuts.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
It was rock star feelings.
And so I was like, okay, well, Lightning Thief closed. And so maybe this is... people finding out about the show late, and
yeah,
then I started getting tagged on social media in fan art of Be More Chill.
Mm. So they're drawing Michael, not your Percy Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, I was getting I was already getting the Lightning Thief stuff, but like all of a sudden I was like getting this like Be More Chill stuff,
mm-hmm,
and then it just kind of started and it never stopped. And over time, like I met the two kids who are kind of like responsible, hmm, for it. They run
President
Tumblr accounts,
uh-huh,
and they found this video of Michael in the bathroom. This
that
from
a fan had shot during a performance or something.
No,
you guys,
no, there's no bootleg of it. Hmm. It was a press preview performance at 54 Below.
Okay.
Where we were plugging an Iconis and Family show at 54. And so Joe asked me to sing Michael in the Bathroom.
So that's the version. I mean, that's
the
context.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you go back and look at it, yeah, I was in a dark moment in my life, and I was, she put the weight back on.
Okay. She did.
She did. And so, but yeah, they found this video, and it really like resonated. And then through that, they found the album, and then it just exploded in a way like none of us had ever seen or heard of or been a part of. And it was like super It was crazy. It was insane. And
is it all on Twitter? Is it, where was it all happening?
Initially, it was all like on Instagram.
Instagram.
Yeah, and I'm not on Tumblr. I'm not that savvy.
Right.
And so, I.
You know, it's just LR.
There's no E. Tumblr.
I'm over 40, so I'm like T-U-M-B-L-E-R. Like, why aren't I?
Why are they showing me washer dryer combos?
And gymnastics.
I'm trying to look up, be more chill. I became friends with this woman, Ashley Latimer.
Is that all online, or did you meet her? Or is
I met her
all...
in person. Okay. We worked on The Lightning Thief together.
Okay.
And and she's like great with great with social media.
Okay.
And so I was like, you know, this is insane. And
what's happening?
And so she kind of like helped kind of guide me and in
how to handle it.
Right. Yeah.
Like meaning what?
Well,
respond to
what
this,
I said,
don't respond to this.
What
or?
I said to her was, I remember my first question was, is it tacky for me to like things that I'm being tagged in and to respond to things? Like, am I going to look like, you know, optically to people, my peers in the business, am I going to look like a monster doing that? Because it's not really like a normal thing.
Right. Well, it's all new for everybody.
It's all very new. And
you
so
want,
everyone's
how do I
kind
navigate
of
this?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she was like, no, she was like, if that's what you want to do, you should 100% do it.
Meaning
and not
if,
care about what people are going
to
think.
If you want to engage because these people are saying things that are lovely, or do you want to engage because maybe it'll help bring the show in? Like, what was the question really?
Do I
relate to my fans online?
That's what it was.
Okay.
At this point,
period.
I was, yeah.
No end game in sight.
Yeah, the
right.
possibility of bringing Be More. I mean, again, we
said goodbye.
That ship sailed and it was over and done with. So we agreed that it would be a nice gesture to respond to things and
like to say thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Just say thank you.
Exactly. And so
it's a present.
And so it was like a thank you, like because they're spending hours drawing and painting and, you know, making, reproducing the costumes from hand and hand stitching patches and so it just kind of, that's how it all kind of started. And then I started getting a lot of messages that were like a little dark.
Like I'm in pain.
Yeah. And
can
I,
you help
and
me?
I got to see why the show resonates with certain people, and that's when the responsibility became a priority for me. That there are these kids who, and that's when I was like, I cannot imagine growing up right now. And it was through me, you know, engaging with these kids who just like really loved the musical,
yeah.
And a lot of them were sharing stories of how the musical may have saved their lives. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized that we were dealing with something that was bigger than anything I've ever been a part of. And that it was really an honor to get to reach out to these kids and talk to them.
So at this point, all they're seeing is that one video of you singing Michael in the Bathroom.
Yeah, that's all that was out
there.
And
they've extrapolated just from that one song, a connection to themselves and to this character of Michael.
Yeah.
I remember when Ben was on, he was saying it's really tricky because he's in a show.
Yeah.
He's learning a lot about all sorts of things as you do as an actor and people sharing their stories with him. But he wasn't a mental health expert. And also he had to like do a show 8 times a week.
Yeah.
And really trying to navigate how to say thank you.
But still
handle
keep...
expectations.
Right, right.
And also go, this is the number for the Trevor Project hotline.
This
is the number. If you're really in trouble, call 911.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's such a tricky thing.
It is tricky.
When yet your heart is just all compassion. But I could imagine since some of the themes are similar.
Yeah.
And what and so, right, here's the contradiction. They're finding you because of social media.
Mm-hmm.
They're in pain in some way. Because of social media, like it's all.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just life. Life is hard for every generation.
Yeah.
These are hard years.
Yeah.
But the bullying component
is
to feel so
impossible.
Exposed publicly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And the way it spirals, right?
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But how did they know from that one song that there's this show that kind of handles and unpacks so much of what they're feeling? That one song generated that.
Yeah. They listened to it. You put out a tweet yesterday.
Yeah.
I was reading them and like.
I wrote, "What does the show mean to you?"
Yeah. And it's not, well, I like the dancing.
Right.
You know, that costume change was how'd they do it?
Right.
It's such a deep level. It's crazy.
Most of it is I was going through a really hard time and I feel like this saved me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was trying to get at with you. Like what you're saying is what they've seen is one song.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless there's some bootleg copy of something going around or like an underground script that's being passed along.
There's an old
stuff.
Draft of, yeah. of a script on Tumblr, but
without the E.
Without the E. It's crazy.
So how is it now? So it's a year since the beginning of like this online community rallying to have more. The 54 Below concert brought you guys together. I mean, they've gotten to see you in different, they get to see you and Joe Iconis perform. But now they're going to get to see the show.
Yeah.
So how did that, and Jen Tepper is producing and it's going to be at the Signature Theater.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's happening because of this online rally?
Yes.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So there is the power of good that can come out of it.
When we announced the show was coming to New York, I put out a tweet that had the New York Times article attached to it. And I wrote from my heart, look what you did.
Uh-huh.
You found this musical. You fell in love with this musical. This musical inspired you to make art and be creative and express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to get to do this in New York City. So, I mean, it's the power of the people. And it is such a unique story. The story of how this is coming back is just, it's so unique and unlike anything else.
Yeah.
And that is why, you know, after our two-player game shows at 54 Below, Joe and I do a meet and greet. And, you know, the cabaret itself lasts 75 minutes.
Was this couple of months of doing the show?
Yeah.
Was that the first time you've done
time.
That?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. We decided that we needed to do a meet and greet because we were getting a lot of like requests. Like, can we meet you? If I bring you art, can you? I mean, the gifts that we get from these kids is like, I have cried so many times during those meet and greets.
I'm sure.
This girl, Ringo, brought a book and every page is like, if you're ever feeling down, here are reasons why people love you. People have been bringing me like jars with handwritten notes from the friends that because this is the other thing is these kids, so many of them have felt alone for such a long time. And the beauty of this show is that it has created a community.
Right.
And so now they're all friends. So one person will say, well, I'm going to go see two-player game. Send me a note that you want to give George and Joe.
Yeah.
And then they stuff them in these little jars and give them to you. And, and like I come home after, you know, the meet and greets, the last one we did lasted 2 hours.
Right. And it's 2 a.m. and you can look through like.
And I'm just sitting in my room alone crying, being like, this is the sweetest thing. And what did I ever do to deserve this kind
George
of like love?
George in my bedroom. Eating pizza rolls.
Literally.
Right. What a full circle.
They're like magnificent people. They're all, they're so full of love and light. And
do you feel pressure now that you're doing it? Like now we have to, so they've seen Michael in the bathroom. Is the whole show going to please them? Right? Like it's like a monster thing, right? Like we can make you, we can kill you, right?
Yeah,
like it's
like
this crazy thing.
No, there's definitely a little bit of pressure there, but it's definitely overshadowed by the love and excitement, you know? Everything from these kids is now it's all so positive.
Did you meet Joe Iconis because you auditioned for his show or were you brought into the Christmas family?
So Jen Tepper worked on Godspell.
Ken
Davenport.
That's where you first met.
And Jen introduced us after a preview once. So Joe and I are releasing our album Two Player Game, which is based on the show at 54 Below. And the album drops Tonight at Midnight. Mm-hmm. And she wrote the liner notes for it. And she sent us her rough draft. And I was walking through Morningside Park and read it and just was uncontrollably crying because it was so beautiful. But she did. She introduced us and she said, George Salazar, this is Joe Iconis. Joe Iconis, this is George Salazar. You guys should work together. And then Joe invited me to do my first Christmas show in 2012. And then that's how it all kind of started.
So are you his muse? Is he your muse? Is it, what is it?
I don't know about all of that. I think Joe has like a gaggle of muses.
Uh-huh.
As someone who interprets other people's work.
Mm-hmm.
There's a click that happens when you get a script or you get sheet music and when something really like speaks to you and you relate to it. And, you know, with Joe, what I find the most impressive thing about his writing, I think, is like, usually there are so many like gaps and blanks to fill as an actor. When you get work, and with Joe, I feel like I look at it and all the work is done for me.
Right.
So it's just a matter of like living.
And opening your mouth and letting the voice come out.
Yeah. And so there's this like, there's an ease to singing his stuff. Not vocally.
No, it's tremendously, it's tremendously complicated.
It's challenging music, but.
Music writing. But, is that what you call it? That music writing is so complicated. Yeah. It's complex music.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I just think we have a nice partnership, and we obviously are friends outside of that world. And so it's just an enjoyable collaboration. And, you know, Joe changed my life because mm-hmm. prior to Joe, like, no one ever saw me doing anything dramatic or serious.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, having made my debut in New York in Godspell, I feel like for a while I was like, ah, that's George. He's a clown. Like,
mm-hmm.
he's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so Joe gave me the opportunity with Be More Chill to flex a different muscle that people were not used
to
seeing.
Well, to break our hearts. I mean, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. It's beautiful. And it's
Thanks.
Heartbreaking. So how are we all going to get to hear Two Player Game?
Well, Two Player Game releases digitally.
So I go to iTunes?
iTunes, Amazon, any kind of like online.
Wherever digital music is available.
Is sold, yeah. And so at midnight on Friday, the 11th.
Of May.
So 2018. It'll probably already be out by the time this podcast is released.
Unless I can get it out in the next 5 minutes. I'm fast. So when you say liner notes, like when you download music from, like, how do you get the liner notes?
There'll be a booklet. I don't know the specifics about the booklet that will be released digitally.
Okay.
But at Two Player Game, we have two shows in May. We've made those album release shows. And Ghostlight Records, Kurt Deutsch and Greg Brunswick, they're amazing people. I still cannot believe that we...
And he did Godspell, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's how he met. And he did the Be More Chill album. This is a great story. I was filming us listening to tracks at the end of the recording day.
And
Of Two-Player Game.
Okay.
And I was so annoyed with myself because every 5 seconds, I just wanted to hear, watching the videos back, I wanted to hear the tracks, and I can't hear anything because every 5 seconds I just kept being like, you guys, thank you so much. This is unbelievable. Like, it's like, will you just cool it, George?
You're here.
They get
You're
it.
At
yeah,
the
we
table.
Did it. They
We're
get
all
it.
Here.
But I am like 100% just so indebted and grateful that they gave us the opportunity to do this and to record it now. I mean, it's crazy.
I've known Kurt Deutsch for a very long time. Kurt was an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're always an actor before he became an entrepreneur and also like, you know, he has Oceana, some amazing wine as well.
Yeah.
But I feel like the last time I saw him in an acting capacity is he was in the waiting room auditioning for Snoopy. For You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Like when I really think about the last time I kind of saw him, and then he's gone on to kind of shepherd through one incredible cast recording after another. Before we go, I'm just going to ask you to sing like the very first, like the very beginning of Play Rehearsal.
Oh, yeah.
my favorite. I sing it all the time.
Well, so Theater Mania just released a sneak peek of the track. So okay. It's on theatermania.com.
Okay,
right
so
now.
I can listen to it all day.
But it goes, I love play rehearsal because it's the best, because it is fun. I love play rehearsal and I get depressed as soon as it's done. But not depressed is in like kill yourself depressed. No, I'm not into self-harm. Dude, I swear here, check my arm. See, I just use the word to emphasize the point. Show the passion that I got. I am passionate a lot. I've got mad gigantic feelings, rad and frantic feelings about most everything. Like gun control, like spring. Like if I'm living up to all I'm meant to be. I also have a touch of ADD. Is that a security camera?
It is.
There it is.
George, thank you.
Thank you.
This was such, I don't know, all joy. All joy. AJ.
AJ.
All joy. Until next time.
I feel the same way. Until next time.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. If you want more information about my guests, go to the website littleknownfactspodcast.com. I also wanted to tell you that there is now a new addition to the website. It is a button that says contributions. This podcast is a true labor of love, and I really, really want to keep doing it for a long time. So if you like listening as much as I love to do it, please feel free to contribute. It would mean the world to me. Also, on Twitter, you can find me at Alana Levine. Instagram is Little Known Facts Podcast, and on Facebook, Little Known Facts Podcast. You can also feel free to rate and review the show on the iTunes show page. This podcast is recorded at Hangar Studios in New York City. This episode was brought to you by Pro Media. Located in Times Square, Pro Media offers both production and post-production services out of its beautiful studios in the heart of New York City. Pro Media, sound vision. Find out more at promedia.nyc.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.